and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to the third edition of Mahindra & Mahindra Limited's Environmental, Social and Governance (ESG) conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. In case you need assistance during the conference call, please signal for an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. K. Chandrasekar, EVP Corporate Finance and Investor Relations, for his opening comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the third edition of ESG call from Mahindra & Mahindra Limited. We understand you are people from the globe, across the globe, who are dialed in to this call. Here we have the senior management of Mahindra & Mahindra with us. And I will introduce them quickly to you. Mr. Urlas Yargo, Group President, IT Sector, Group CTO and Chairman, Group Sustainability. Mr. Rajiv Dubey, Group President, HR and Corporate Services, and CEO, Aftermarket Sector, and Chairman, Corporate Governance Cell. And Mr. V.S. Parthasarathy, President, Group CFO and Group CIO. The format of this call will be that for the first 30 minutes or so, we will ask some questions with the three senior management people from here and then open up the session for questions from the investors. So the first question is on governance. I want to begin with Rajiv and then move on to Partha. Rajiv, we have got a lot of awards for governance, whether it is Best Board or the Golden Peacock Award, Asia Money Award, or several other awards which I can go on mentioning. There must be something that we are doing differently or in a, you know, distinct way that has brought us these awards. Can you tell us what makes the difference in the corporate world for us to get these awards and stand out?
Okay, so very respectfully, I think we have a very strong board of directors with a very good share of independent directors, each one of whom is truly independent and a luminary in his own right. We have very robust governance processes. We have all the various committees of the board, and they all meet regularly and spend a lot of time on issues of governance, and they are supported by the corporate governance cell and with the chief ethics officer. So I think basically we have a very good setup for governance processes. I'm not even talking about governance in the broader sense, which is about how do you ensure that resources are employed effectively for the purpose they're meant for, because that would mean I would have to talk about a large number of other platforms that we have, for example, for HR, for CSR, for talent management. So I won't talk about that. I'll restrict myself right now to discussing about the board. So, of course, we have also a separate chairman and managing director. Those two roles have been separated. I think, above all, we live our core values. And as a result of that, we have extremely cordial relations with our unions and workers, because we believe that not only do we need to be competitive, but we also need to be fair and inclusive. So competitiveness with fairness and inclusiveness is the guiding principle for our relationship with our workers. We have had no loss of mandates for the last 3 years. There have been regular wage increases, regular agreements with the union. On top of that, we believe that community interaction through CSR is an integral part of our strategy. And we have very strong connections with community, and we look upon community interaction not only as morally and philosophically the right thing to do, which would have been good enough, but we also look upon it as a mother font for business innovation. Because when we interact with communities, we have access to the unmet needs of underserved customers in underpenetrated markets. And that could become a source of generating new business models, products, and services. We also look upon community interaction as a crucible experience for leadership development. So if you see, we have combined very much our commitment to the triple bottom line of profit, people, and planet, and backed it up with very robust processes, metrics, and systems. So this overall is my answer to your question.
Thanks, Rajiv. Partha, as a CFO, group CFO, you are carry part of the fiduciary responsibility very strongly. From your point of view, what has made the difference for us to stand in good stead?
I think Rajiv very articulately explained many of the facets. Let me add some contours to it. We are a group who are present in about through 10 sectors in about more than 20 industries. And legal company-wise, it is 340 legal companies and 250 operating companies. So that's the kind of spread breadth that we have. And a normal conglomerate or a group like this would have listed company at the top, and then all the other companies will be unlisted. But what we have encouraged is each of the sectors to grow and you know reach out their own value creation process by listing. And therefore, automatically they have boards of a listed company and they are answerable to the larger public, bringing in big governance standards. That's why we call ourselves a federation and not a conglomerate. So we now have 10 listed companies, and the other sectors and other businesses which are growing are also encouraged tomorrow to seek value creation opportunity and listing opportunity. So this is a process. The second is that most of them being independent also brings into the focus how does we function as a group. And this is where the overall planning process comes in. We call it the Mahindra annual planning cycle and in another way war room. And both are interesting terminologies that we use. The war room is because the center or the group is not asking questions of the sector or business. They are together standing in front of the scenario as it emerges to challenge, critique, to see what are the best results they can achieve. And then the business or the sector takes it to their respective boards and gets it approved by their board with inputs, which makes it better, but leaving the autonomy and power of the board intact. The third one, which is that there is also synergy to be had in this group, best practices to be shared in the group. And this, again, the group facilitates by bringing the synergy so that 1+1 of each business just doesn't add up to 2, but adds up to more than 2. The thing about many of these businesses' linkages, one example is Mahindra Finance, where it acts as a very strategic business enabler to auto and farm equipment, and it in turn is enabled by these two businesses. But it is interdependence and not dependent. So that, again, helps in terms of creating strong governance processes, which keeps everything at arm's length, but still enables the group to overall see greater achievement. So having said this, we must all, you know, kind of also think, why, what is the logic between so getting into so many diverse businesses? This is an often asked question. And the way and M&M looks at itself is into two parts, an operating company and an investment company. And when it is an investment company, it looks itself in terms of where should it invest. And then there are three things that the board, which has set up a separate unit for supervising this called the Committee of Strategic Investment, where it looks as micro trends, looks at how, you know, you have, whether you have a right to play and right to win, Chandra. And the last question is the leadership right? And of course, they have to meet the financial return criteria based on which the investments are looked at. Our sweet spot is, of course, B2C. We are present in many businesses which is B2C. But we are also in B2B and B2G businesses. But if you ask me, you know, where is the sweet spot? That's where the consumer often happen to be the sweet spot on us while we are present in other things. So in nutshell, the governance and practices is what in a from a board and from an operating unit is what I described. So back to you, Chandra.
Thank you, Partha. Mr. Yargo, as chairman of the Group Sustainability Council, you've been seeing across businesses what you have been focusing on, and that has brought us in a nutshell great dividends in terms of our positioning in this area. So how would you look back and see the highlights that we have achieved this year?
Thank you. Actually, it's been a very good year for sustainability at the Mahindra Group. We were the first company to join EP100, and we committed to double our energy productivity by the year 2030. In addition, Mahindra Holidays became the first company in the hospitality sector to join this program. Our group company, Mahindra Lifespace Developers, has played a leadership role in the formation of a cross-industry CEO-led consortium on sustainable housing, and also partnered with Terry to improve technologies for India's green buildings. Our other group company, Mahindra World City, recently hosted Confluence 2017, a forum where diverse stakeholders who participate in the creation of urban ecosystems got together. And this is their third year of organizing this event. And they had some very interesting panel members from Spain, Israel, from McKinsey and Company, some regulators, people who run cities, so it was a very, very good conference. And they also had an artist there, actually, who talked about, how art can actually transform communities in such cities. We continue to be water positive as a group. We harness and save more water than we consume, through our micro-irrigation business, EPC Industries, and through our water harvesting projects. And, a major honor for us was that our chairman, Anand Mahindra, was invited by the United Nations to represent the corporate world at the historic signing ceremony for the Paris Climate Change Agreement in April. This is an acknowledgement of our group's efforts to address climate change over the years. And we've also done other things on our leadership commitment. In October, we became the first Indian company to announce an internal carbon price of $10 per ton of emissions. We will use this to further reduce our carbon footprint. We estimate that it will be reduced by 25% over the next 3 years. Actions like these have continued to build our leadership perception in sustainability, and as a result, we've also won a number of awards, including the Indian Chamber of Commerce Award for our sustainability report, and my colleague Anirban Ghosh has won a number of awards as distinguished Chief Sustainability Officer. So we are very proud of that.
Thank you, Mr. Yargo. Rajiv, one of the key components of sustainability for any business and its performance is the relationship with the employees, especially at the workman level. How do you see this in the group and in Mahindra's, particularly in the light of what we have had such a stable relationship with them, as you mentioned in your opening remarks also?
So as I mentioned, our inspiration for relationship with our workers is drawn from the three words: competitive, fair, and inclusive. So we have huge focus on unleashing the potential of our workforce by continuous dialogue, by explaining our business, by providing them a lot of learning and development and technical training, and listening to them. I think dialoguing, listening, empowering them, making them work in self-governing groups, so a huge amount of empowerment, the same way as we empower our officers. In fact, our guiding principle is that whatever ecosystem, whatever inputs we provide for our officers to enhance and unleash their potential, we provide the same for our workers. So we have something called the Transformational Work Culture Council that has been working for the last 10 years, where our focus is totally on how do we unleash the productivity and the potential of our workforce. Now, as a result of that, we have had no production loss in the past few years. 94% of our people are covered by the union. We have regular agreements on time with the union where there is a lot of focus on productivity. And, of course, we are meeting the basic hygiene factors. That goes without saying. Safety and social security, canteen, all these things goes without saying. And we extend these basic things and a higher than minimum wage for our contract labor also. So a lot of the principles of engaging with our people, empowering them, giving them training, giving them a lot of communication, we follow that for our contract labor also.
Rajiv, that's very comprehensive. Moving on, Partha, how do you think our businesses are integrating sustainability in our products, services, area, so that, you know, we are also mindful of the sustainability aspect in whatever we do?
Thank you, Chandra. When we look at this question, you've got to see, I can put them into two buckets. What is the industry practice and where we are participating? What's the differentiating factor and what more? Yeah. So first, if you look at it, auto, vehicle, SUV, UE, they need to be fuel efficient. So our recent launch of Blazo actually says that if you're not that fuel efficient, we'll take it back. If you don't feel it on road to be that fuel efficient, I'll take it back. So it's a commitment to environment in a larger sense where we are willing to put money where our mouth is. The second part is in terms of, you know, a micro hybrid, that kind of start-stop so that the fuel consumption is minimized at those kind of things. And providing economy and turbo. When you need power, you get power. But rest of the time, can you save fuel and therefore less emission into the world? I think where we change gear, if we use a auto term, into, you know, turbo gear, is when we go to EV. So we can proudly claim that we are the first and the only fully EV kind of vehicle on the roads today. I say that we are a fourth generation car on the roads, which means number of kilometers that our cars have done on road is a very, very large one, and that gives a lot of data to us. So we got an EV, it's a fourth generation, now there is a Verito, or passenger car, which now has, which is now fully electrified. Then we also have Jito, a kind of a commercial vehicle, which has similar electric vehicle features. So this is differentiating us and being fully integrated into a non-polluting standard as we go forward. I hope this picks up, which then will give a leapfrog to environment and standards in India. There we need support in terms of, you know, fast charging and other infrastructure, which we are pioneering, but we need a lot of support from the government, and I hope that happens sooner than later. The third part is, saying how do we partner India to being a more environmental friendly country? And there we have invested in renewable energy as business option. We are investing in creating solar power capacity to the tune of 325 megawatts. Out of which 50 megawatts capacity is already operational. The next phase is building turnkey projects for even others and making the largest EPC in solar business, and then onwards to looking at electrifying villages and individual buildings by rooftop solar. So all of this is the initiatives that we are taking in that front, Chandra.
Thank you, Partha. Mr. Yargo, taking a cue from your earlier statement, being the first company with a carbon pricing, can you just elaborate on that, how this carbon pricing takes place? What is our aim?
Well, our aim is basically to reduce the carbon footprint of our group. And there are different ways of doing that. People use carbon pricing in different ways. Sometimes they use some kind of a shadow pricing for their internal investment decisions. Sometimes they impose a kind of an internal tax on emission-intensive activities. So we had a fairly rigorous debate internally on what would be the best way for us to approach this issue. And we finally decided that, you know, what would work best for us is to directly invest a certain amount of money to reduce our carbon footprint going forward, because that would be most practical, most effective, and in that sense much easier to implement and less disruptive. So this process, we were helped by the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition, led by the World Bank and IMF, and the World Resources Institute, who helped us to understand all the different issues and the mechanisms that can be used to implement such a carbon price. And we've taken a fairly simple approach in terms of, you know, just investing an amount of money. And what we did was we calculated how much we were already investing for such technologies to reduce our emissions. And, you know, after talking internally, we decided to raise that amount from, say, $6 to $8 per ton of carbon dioxide that we were currently doing to about $10 per ton. Now, at that rate, we will invest 25 to 30 crores of rupees, which is about $4.5 million to reduce our emissions, which we believe will bring it down by about 25% over the next 3 years. And we will invest the money in things like renewable energy, solar, wind, biomass, LED and magnetic induction lighting, energy efficient air conditioning systems, energy efficient motors, occupancy sensors in our office buildings, natural light tubes, solar skylights, different technologies for sewage treatment that don't use electricity, and hybrid generators.
Mr. Yap, one quick question in addition to that is about, you mentioned about being water positive in our business. How did we achieve this?
You know, we have always put in efforts for conservation and harvesting of water. And on top of that, recurring droughts and, you know, drought-like situations across the country pushed us to accelerate our efforts. So we actually, a couple of years ago, we had the theme of our sustainability report was H2O to H2 infinity. And the intent was to turn the clock back on water and return to a situation where water is once again available in abundance. So in 2013-14, we achieved a water positive status because the micro irrigation systems that we implemented in Baroda, by use of drip and sprinkler irrigation systems, saved 8.4 million cubic meters of water as against our total water consumption in the group of 6.1 million cubic meters. So we've also made multiple interventions to address issues of water efficiencies in our locations, and we've invested in timers and aerators and faucets, waterless urinals, advanced piping systems, efficient water treatment systems for effluent treatment plants, sewage treatment plants. And, you know, we have increased the water table at our plant locations. In fact, I'm told that people who have the opportunity to fly over our Zahirabad plant see this arid landscape with a little green oasis which is around our Zahirabad plant. So, you know, it's a wonderful thing what people have been able to create just by trying to conserve water and build up the water table there. In addition, we've taken up integrated watershed development programs as part of our CSR activities. And one such example is at Damo in Madhya Pradesh, where we have been instrumental in providing the local community year-round access to water and to maximize productivity from every drop of water that they do use. So this has actually helped us to transform the society in that region. I'm told that the earnings of people in Damo have gone up because of some of these initiatives. And we've also won a national award from CIITC for this initiative.
Thank you, Mr. Yago. Raji, we talked about the relationship we have with the unions and the workmen. Now, it is also important how we nurture the talent. The Mahindra way of nurturing talent. Can you throw some light as to how we do that?
Sure. So I would like to talk about two facets. One is our talent management process, which is a very well-defined architecture and supported by a network of talent councils which cover business areas and functional skills and chaired by the Apex Talent Council. And somebody like Anand Mahindra, who chairs the Apex Talent Council, would spend 10 days in the year in the talent management process. And each of these councils, in turn, would have spent many, many days, and they are all manned by business people supported by HR. So that's the architecture. What are the questions that we address? So for each business, we say, given the business strategy, what are the mindset, skills, and competencies required over the next 3 to 5 years to make those strategies actually get implemented? What is the gap in that, and how do we intend to fill that gap? Do we develop it internally, or do we have to bring in talent from outside? So that's one at the level of each business. Then we look at the succession planning for critical positions. What if there is a sort of drop-dead scenario? Who will come in and fill? Who will fill? Who is ready to fill it after, say, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? So succession planning. And finally, for each individual who has been identified as being critical and high potential, what is that individual's development plan over the next 1 year in great detail and for the next 2-3 years in a somewhat more macro level? So this is the, roughly speaking, the issues that we address and the architecture and the process that we follow for talent management. A very important means of delivering the skills and competencies and mindsets is through the Mahindra Leadership University, which is guided by what we call the 3+5 framework. So at a broad level, we are guided by the core purpose of the group, which is to create outperforming businesses that drive positive change in the lives of our stakeholders and communities by challenging conventional thinking and innovatively using our resources. So there are three mindsets, which we call the RISE pillars, and these mindsets have led to a cultural transformation, which we hope will create the business transformation and fulfill the core purpose of driving positive change throughout performing businesses. And these three mindsets, which is the three of the 3+5, is accept no limits, alternative thinking, driving positive change. And we have, over the past 5-6 years, aligned all the HR levers to these three RISE pillars. And I don't want to go into the detail of what the HR levers are. It's things like the performance management system, the recruitment system, the onboarding, the learning and development, the reward and recognition, the talent management, the communication. All these have been aligned to the three RISE pillars. But in addition to that, since what people experience is not the levers but the behaviors of people, we have identified 5 leadership behaviors which we are driving like mad through the Mahindra Leadership University. These are, number 1, the ability to use the whole mind in any situation where you combine left brain with right brain. Number 2, to be a multiplier of passion, engagement, ownership, and a sense of contribution by not being the extreme command and control type, but by listening, respecting the views, focusing on asking the right questions, and then co-creating the answers with our teams. Third one is to do with risk-taking and experimentation to create innovation, and it talks about the ability to manage fear so that we can experiment and take risks, and equally important, to leverage the learning from failure. So that's the third. The fourth one we call mindfulness, which is being open to all possibilities that exist in the moment in any situation and not being a prisoner of our own past success or failure. And last but not least is the ability to generate trust through authenticity by walking the talk and by removing the mask. So this is the 3+5 framework, and of course we have technical competencies. Each business, each function will have its own big long list of technical competencies, but the 3+5 framework drives the way in which we deliver leadership development.
Thank you, Rajiv. That was actually delivered very passionately. I'm going to ask Sriram Ramchandran, who is head of IR, investor relations, sitting here, a question. Sriram, how do you ensure that you are giving equal treatment to all investors? Completely.
And one of the things which we clearly focus is equal access to both, meeting management as well as to the information. That's something which we focus for all our institutional investors. So, in fact, we don't discriminate between whether somebody is an investor, not investor, potentially they are going to invest. Anybody who asks for a meeting, we would normally meet. Only condition is in the silent period we don't meet. Otherwise, given the time is available, we definitely make all our efforts to meet. And also we make efforts to ensure that they meet the management, except the timing is the only constraint. Otherwise, also in terms of to ensure that everybody gets the right, the actual information. So we publish the transcripts of all our calls. Also, what we have done, which not many people have seen doing, is publishing flash report. After every con call, we publish a flash report so that people who could not attend or even those who attended can get a quick summary of what was discussed and which could help for their own analysis. That's something which we started 2 years back, and that's proceeding very well. The other thing which we started last year, again with the same objective of making investors' job easier, was to come up with a digital annual review, a digital annual report. This is something where you would see the management's talk. The CEs, each CE has talked about, we have a message from CFO, chairman, MD, each CEs, and that quickly captures, what happened in the last year very crisply. We also provide data in a form which can be extracted into Excel, do the analysis, you can compare over the years, you can choose whatever data you want. So all this we are doing in such a so that the investor's job becomes easier and they could. Even the first time analyzer, first time somebody wants to look at the company, they will have to just go to their website. It's www.mahindra.com/annual-review/FY16. So we would update it when this year is over. And I think these are some other things which we have been doing to ensure that. And in fact, Chandra, we have been winning a few awards. Finance Asia, we won an award for Best in IR. Institutional Investor, the sell side analyst rated us one of the top 2 in Asia, in the auto industry. And also very recently, Asia Money, we got the award for Best Corporate Governance. And also they gave us a couple of other awards. One is Best for Shareholders' Rights and Equitable Treatment. Exactly the same question we asked. We got number 1 in that. And also Best for Responsibilities of Management and the Board of Directors. So I think those are testimony of what we have been doing.
Okay, Sriram, thank you. Before we open the session for questions, Partha, a tricky question for you as Group CFO. How do you trade off between ESG and the financial logic for investments?
So it's not a tricky question. It's very easy because I don't see it as a trade-off. I look at ESG as not as expense but as investment. And what has helped us, we not done it for that purpose. What it has done, it has given us a premium. Okay, I say it is a Federation premium that you are in some sense getting for doing this. And it is not because we have done something with an end in mind, but it's because what we are. And as we claim ourselves to be making positive change, that can only happen if you are doing and living this every day. So to help more people, right? So this is the DNA of the company that you are seeing, and I don't have to make any decision.
Thank you, Pata. So we open the session for questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to only use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Amin Pirani from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. So my first question was on the water positive status of the group. You did mention that, you know, your micro irrigation efforts obviously helped you to become a water positive, you know, on a group level. But could you give us some examples or instances wherein at every operating company level, how do you manage to, you know, drive that process of, you know, being water positive or, you know, minimum wastage or pollution of the water resources?
So actually what has happened is over the last few years, as I mentioned in my earlier answer, because of the droughts and drought-like situations that have taken place, you know, that issue has really come to the front. Mm-hmm. And so each of our locations, you know, they try to manage how much water they use. They try to recycle whatever they can. They try to harvest wherever possible. And so, you know, our attempt is to make each of our locations stress-free from a water requirement standpoint. And I can't say that all locations are there, but we are making progress and we intend to keep working on this. Anything you want to add?
Yeah. Some of you, and we can give one example where the location has become almost about 80% self-sufficient in water. And they have started converting the existing landscape to have more storage of water, which can be used post-monsoon.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what making them, you know, they're marching towards becoming water positive as a location.
Okay.
So the earlier point which Mr. Yargov mentioned was kind of using offset mechanism,
mm-hmm.
where at some other locations we have saved water, which is more than what we consume.
Yeah.
But that will not make the location stress free.
Right.
So these are the efforts which every location is now making.
Okay.
There's one location where that the landscape is converted with a small dam-like structure.
Okay.
This is the efforts which, and besides the other efforts which he also mentioned about aerators and faucets and waterless urinals and, you know, all those things.
Okay. Understood. So that's helpful. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you.
Any participants who wish to ask a question at this time may please press star and one.
So while you are asking the question, I got a question from one of the investors. This is to Rajiv. Rajiv, what is the stand of Mahindra Group on employment, particularly temporary employment?
Yeah.
Appointing temporary employees, yes, written.
Yeah, so we have laid down certain guidelines. I guess by temporary, the focus is on contract labor. That seems to be the point. Okay. So on contract labor management, we have been very proactively following the principle that we not only need to be competitive, but we also need to be fair and inclusive. So what does fair and inclusive mean? Number one is we have said that contract labor should not be deployed in core activities. That at the total level of the company, there has to be a ratio of 70% to 30% between the permanent and the contract labor. And today, that ratio of contract labor to the total employment is at 28%. We are always above the minimum wages at every location. We have put great stress on canteen facilities, apparel, protective gear. Then wherever we have cultural events,
training,
quality, safety, TPM, Founders Day, Diwali, we don't distinguish between permanent and contract labor. Then we have a lot of work on behavioral-based safety training, a fair amount of communication, a platform to communicate industry highlights by the plant head. There is a monthly for contract labor inclusion and participation, quarterly for the contractors themselves, and a huge amount of sensitization about quality, safety, and changing customer preference. So while we have recognized that due to the fluctuations in activity level, we need to have contract labor, we want to make sure that we pay them more than competitive wages and we provide them the respect and the basic hygiene factors that we would for our own permanent employees.
Thank you, Rajiv. Is there any question? Or I have got one more from an investor.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may please press star and one.
Partha, meanwhile, this question is to you. This is about investments in defense area. What is M&M? M&M is one of the frequent names that is mentioned as a defense player. What is our stand in terms of defense activities for the group?
Okay. There are two parts. Let me answer. One is what we are doing right now. And second is, any other connotations that we have had when you may heard Chandra when you were asking that question. So please prompt me if I didn't answer that. First and foremost is that in order not to have any business directly of defense in M&M, we have a 100% subsidiary called MDS, Mahindra Defense Services, which houses any defense business that we do. So therefore, no business per se is done as a matter of practice in M&M. We may still have some orders coming from M&M because the government recognizes M&M, which we pass on to the concern, and that too we hope over a period of time will completely go to them. So this is how we are structured, and that's the current structure. Okay. The second part is in terms of what do we do. Today we do armoring of vehicles. Today we do some in terms of with telephonics, radar systems. We do a little bit of casing of shell and other smaller machining and parts for Navy. And similarly, we do some things in the Army space. Yeah. But if the government of India looks at a futuristic vehicle, which they call it FICV, a futuristic infantry combative vehicle, then we would certainly like to be part of the process when India wants to be self-reliant and defending its borders. Okay, so that's where we are and where we intend to go. So we will partner India, and it is what it states, defense.
And India is a signatory to many international defense protocols, well within the frontier.
So we are partnering. Who is partnering with the world order in terms of keeping it safe, but at the same time ensuring that protection is ensured.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, thank you. We have the next question from the line of Chirag Thagiswala from GMO. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Hello, sir. Just wanted to understand that you said that you have been investing in renewable energies in various phases. So, what portion of your own power requirement for your own manufacturing is being contributed from renewable energy? And what is the industry norm?
About, at this point of time, I understand it's about 5%. But we certainly expect to see it grow as time goes on.
And sir, anything? What could be the industry norm, industry practice for this?
We do not have ready figures, but I think India has started switching on to this recently, so it is reasonable to assume we are in the range.
So just let me kind of elaborate on this. If you look at our plant in electric vehicle in Reva, yeah, it's a LEED certified platinum. Investment which basically says that it uses a major portion of renewable and that maybe 30% of its requirement may be coming out of solar and other renewable sources. Other plants have tried to use the solar and they are in the process of enhancing. Ulla just said 5%. So it, overall it may be 5% for the plant and electric kind of a vehicle even at 30%. The intent is to keep increasing this as we go on, so there is more reliance on renewable power than on conventional.
Also, some of our existing facilities, like the one at Kandivali, four-storied building.
Yeah.
I believe it is now diamond, platinum certified for leads.
Okay.
Okay, and in terms of your carbon emission and water consumption intensity, how are you as a company faring in terms of if you compare yourself with the industry practice or with the global benchmark?
We are in the leadership position, both in water as well as energy consumption. So right now, within the last 7 years, we have consumed around 44% on energy at Mahindra & Mahindra Limited, and we have planned for the next 3 years is 25%, we disclosed with you. So we are in the leadership position as regards. That is how we became the signatory for the Energy Productivity 100, the program of the Climate Group.
May I come in on this one? This is Anirban Ghosh.
Yep.
If you were to look at the data provided by companies in sustainability reports, mm-hmm. you will find that our usage of water per unit vehicle produced among the lowest in the world. In terms of energy used per vehicle produced, we are very much there in the top 10. Over the last 6 or 7 years, the energy used per vehicle produced has gone down by 44% for automobiles. So if I understand your question right, our levels of energy efficiency and water efficiency for production of vehicles is among the best in the world. And this is reflected in the data in the sustainability reports of peer companies.
And in terms of if I look at the ESG disclosure aspect, so how do you see the ESG disclosure being evolving in India, especially being a part of the emerging market?
I didn't understand the question.
He says, how do you see ESG reporting evolving in India?
Well, I think now more and more companies are getting into this. And to that extent, I think it also puts more pressure on companies that are reporting ESG to keep improving their game. So I'm very pleased with it. And of course, many of these reports are certified by third-party external auditors, assurance.
And the regulators are also now bringing more companies in the fold of ESG reports. The business responsibility report, which got initiated in 2013, initially was a voluntary report for only 100 top companies by market cap. Now it is extended to 500 top companies by market cap. And now there is a initiation of discussion of integrated report, so which again will talk about the natural valuation, the human capital valuation, and all the other aspects which are part of ESG. Now slowly the bandwidth is increasing.
So you know, you stole my thunder. I was going to talk about integrated reporting, but yeah. So no, certainly, because that only shows that it's you all. I mean, everybody who does this and not, and that's the basic point. Integrated reporting is the basis on which we must, you know, the operations comes through, and not a is not a putting together of reports and calling it integrated report.
Yeah.
So we are pleased that India is progressing on that, and we hope to be in the forefront of this.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question.
We have the next question from the line of Rohan Kote from Prabhudas Lilladher. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. I had a query. Basically, your ESG plans would be drawn from the long term, but if something like demonetization has, which came up in November, would you have altered your plans to take in the short-term impact on your customers and maybe your employees, and maybe some steps that you would have taken to alleviate the impact on that?
So this is called a googly question. Okay, so but I'm going to ask everyone to take a little bit of pot shot on this.
So just repeat the question.
He's saying demonetization how happened.
Yeah.
So how have you taken and helped your customers, vendors, ecosystem? What is the ESG angle to this whole demonetization? It's a very good question in a sense. How fast are you in terms of things? So any one of you can take a shot. I'll come last because I want time to think.
So I can come in very quickly. Certainly, we have not let up in any of our human capital and CSR activities. That's for sure. On the other hand, I know that in our businesses, we have made a lot of effort to ease the burden of making payments for people in our supply chain, whether they be dealers or whether they be suppliers. So from our side, we have tried our best to ease out the pains of demonetization.
And also, I think to the extent that our employees were affected, we had different banks come in here, you know, take the forms, and, you know, we could give our whatever currency notes that people had. So just make the process a little bit easier. I mean, ultimately, there is still some amount of pain that everyone has to go through, but at least, you know, we try to mitigate it to the extent possible.
So I just have to add, I mean, they've kind of succinctly summarized, but we had to do two things, actually. One, to do all the right things, which Rajiv and Ullas elaborated on. However, we also have to make sure that we also make sure that the Government of India, whatever it has announced, is carried in not only in spirit, but also both spirit and deed. So we are kept away from anything, you know, to the extent if it caused a little pain, we lived with the pain because the objective has to be achieved. But at the same time, we came out with innovative products to take care of even the margin money, which temporary was not able to pay because the Mandi didn't pay the farmer. So we worked with them hand in hand to make sure both the government and the which is also a big stakeholder, and the other stakeholders are both benefited. But there was inevitably some pain, which we all took.
And we never stopped the investment at any stage for our CapEx and other things.
Absolutely.
So, any more questions?
No, this was very helpful. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There is one question from Kapil Singh, who is not able to put the questions online. Is there any weightage to projects which have higher or bracket lower ESG ranking while allocation of capital? So in allocation of capital, do you give weightage to ESG aspects?
So, you know, our attempt has always been to try and make sure that our businesses, when they consider projects, you know, look at the impacts on ESG, and therefore if there are more than one option in terms of technology chosen, you know, that they are able to make the right choice. And here my personal belief is that if people can see the two things side by side, that they will in fact make the right choice, because ultimately all of us want to leave the world a better place for our future generations. So my hope is that, you know, going forward, we'll be able to you put that into some kind of, you know, lower hurdle rate for projects that do particularly well on ESG measures. But I have to work on Partha and Chandra on these type of things.
So just to kind of put it the other way, carbon credit is the way we've chosen at this point of time to look at it. But as Ulla says, this is a journey. This is not an end point. And we need to do different and more things as we go forward.
And Partha, you also mentioned in the beginning that governance is premium for us in a sense.
Yeah.
So investment in that is brought back by premium. Rajiv, you have...
No, I have no
question. Yeah, we can take the last question.
Yes, sir. We have the next question from the line of Navneet Manoj from SBI Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
No, in fact, exactly, I have this, exactly the same question on capital allocation, whether you consider ESG parameters while allocating the capital. Maybe if you can elaborate a little bit more, I'm sure you have already answered.
Yeah. Okay, so let me try and give a lead to the question, and Ullas and Rajiv, please come in. The way we have looked at that project is based on the merits of the project, and we are not able to clearly come out with what could be way to look at ESG within that. But we thought a good way to look at is carbon credit. So if we looked at overall all the projects we are doing, this is the carbon that is emitting, how can we get credit? And that's the initiative Ullas and Pawan have kind of tried to push that as an ecosystem in audit and in various other group companies as each business is taken out. The next, and Ullas's point is this is not a full stop here. We have to do more. So if you ask me, how do I judge projects? I judge projects the same way I've always judged, based on, the triple bottom line, but mainly focused on IRR. And taking carbon credit as a reverse side. Going forward, we may want to do more, which I will come and share with you.
See, the other point I just wanted to make is that when we are putting up a new facility, people will inevitably choose the greenest of technologies that they can find. So the challenge is really about going into old plants and making them more efficient or greener. And I think that's where, going forward, we would... Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you say
this building itself, where we are right now having this call, is also preparing for IGBC green certification, being an existing building. And similarly, the building which we mentioned earlier, which is in our Kandivali plant, is also an old building, about 40 years old building. And that building is just received platinum certification of IGBC. So all these efforts are, when the capital allocation happens, these are considered. And that is why these projects get sanctioned.
Yeah.
May I make a contribution?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, Rajiv?
No, I think Anirban.
Anirban is saying something.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very good question. And maybe the question is rooted in the fact that in the past, ESG-related investments have found it difficult to get traction. Luckily, within our group, that is not the case. And one of the major reasons is that we are able to find many projects with very high returns on investment and very short payback periods. So there is a metric we are toying with. We've used it for some projects where we've brought both the financial and the environment angle together. The metric is emission reduced divided by the payback period, and it serves as a very good way of prioritizing projects to implement. We've tried it on a few projects. It's worked very well, so chances are we will be using this metric in the future. Just to give an indication that once we recognized that these projects did have very handsome returns, investment in projects of these kinds have gone up more than 5 or 6 times, and I'm being conservative here, and has actually resulted in the confidence to announce an internal carbon price. I hope I've been able to address most parts of the question. Mr. Dubey will
add. I just want to quickly add that among our leadership competencies is called leadership through sustainability, which measures the commitment to the triple bottom line.
So, thank you very much, gentlemen and ladies, and the investors who have been present patiently throughout. We thank the senior management team here, and we hand over the mic to the service providers.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Mahindra and Mahindra Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Partha.